Sports Talk Chicago with Joey Christopoulos is brought to you by...
Injured in an accident? That's no game. But you can bet those insurance companies are going to play dirty to keep that cash from you. What you need is a most valuable player on your team. MVP Injury Law has been bringing home the gold for their clients for over 30 years. No win, no fee. MVPinjurylaw.com. We'll get you the gold.
312-883-9500-MVP.
MVPinjurylaw.com. We'll get you the gold.
Welcome to Sports Talk Chicago. And now, with your host, Joey Christopoulos.
It is still March, but it is time. I've got to do my season win total prediction for the Chicago Cubs because they currently are preparing to play the Los Angeles Dodgers in Japan for two games to kick off the regular season. For those of you confused, they will then fly back. They will then play, I believe, four or five more exhibition games and then officially kick off the season the week after that. Chicago Cubs will be on the road on the West Coast to start their year, and then the home opener April 4th against San Diego. So, it's St. Patrick's Day weekend, and I got to do my win total prediction now because they're about to play real games. And this Chicago Cubs season is incredibly interesting, and the more people I talk to, whether they're industry people or whether they're just friends and whether they're just family, there seem to be two different camps, and I am going to make my pitch to you to live in the third rail, the one you didn't see coming. There are two Chicago Cubs fans right now. The first one is the Chicago Cubs fan that is caught up in the recent past. And that meaning back-to-back 83 win seasons. Do they have what it takes to make the playoffs? Some angst, some frustration there. Is Craig Counsell a product of the Milwaukee Brewers organization? Or is the Milwaukee Brewers organization a product of Craig Counsell? Back and forth. And then the other type of Cub fan who is constantly living in the future, and I find myself in this category a whole lot, and this is just basically the question of, will Ricketts ever spend the money? Will owner Tom Ricketts ever hand out a $2 million contract? Something the Chicago Cubs have never done. The Seattle Mariners, a long time ago, paid Robinson Cano over $200 million. The Chicago Cubs have never handed out that contract. To this day, and it's over 10 years ago, Jason Hayward is still the biggest, most lucrative contract the Chicago Cubs have ever passed out. And I'm sorry, after 10 years, that is no longer a convenient excuse of why the Chicago Cubs should be wary of handing out that type of deal. So yeah, maybe you're living in the past. Little mediocre 83 win seasons. Maybe you're still grieving the loss of the Cubby core. Do what you want. Feel how you feel and live your life. Or maybe you're living in the future saying, man, will the Chicago Cubs ever spend the type of money that is comparable to the market that they're in, the stature and brand that is the Chicago Cubs? The third one that I'm asking for heading into this 2025 season for the Chicago Cubs is I'm asking you, the Cubs fan, the one listening or the one watching, I'm asking you to live in the present just for once. For a couple of reasons. The first one is, I hope the Chicago Cubs fans live in the present because I think this can be, it's on the precipice, it's got some breadcrumbs, and it is leading towards a competitive, entertaining season. Why do I feel that way? Well, there's a couple of hallmarks, and part of it is we have to go back into the past to make you understand why you need to live in the present. If you're stuck in the past last year with the offense, the back half of the lineup was atrocious. Dansby Swanson, not good. Miguel Amaya, Pete Crow Armstrong, two young players that for the most part, the first 3 months of the season were terrible. And there were many days and many nights when the Chicago Cubs ran out there and that second half of that lineup had 3-4 automatic outs in it. Sometimes they were playing Master Boney and hitting him down there too as well. Four auto outs. And it led to some tight ball games. And it led us putting a lot of outcomes into the hands of a bullpen that was not very good. And I'm being kind on that when you blow 27, 28 saves in a season And I've had my fill of railing on Hector Neris. But a couple things happened, right? And the first one was, sometimes there's pain and patience, right? Where you have to give it credit where when they moved off of David Ross and they moved over to Craig Counsell, I was a David Ross fan, but Craig Counsell had the pedigree and the resume. And one of the things you kept hearing about it all the time was that with Craig Counsell, he would let the kids play. And not just let them play, but not guardrail them and just ride them through the ups and the downs and keep working with them and working with them and working with them until it clicked. David Ross, on the other hand, took a different tactic. He was always trying to win, I think, every single day. And by playing a young player, if they had a couple of hot days, he would reward them with at-bats. If they started to cool off, he'd move off on them. If they went into a slump, he would back off on them, try and get them in the cage and try and bring them back up when they were ready to play. But that bait and switch a little bit, I think, can cause a little bit of anxiety for a player where things are going great, things are going bad, now I'm sitting down. When I come back, things had better be great again, or I'm going to sit down again. Craig Counsell didn't do that. He just kept playing Miguel Amaya, kept playing Pico Armstrong. At no point did he consider sending them down to the minors, just kept playing them and playing them, playing them. And what happened? Both of them put together strong August and September months to finish up the season. And now what are we seeing? Both of those guys, it's, trust me, just spring training. But I'm here to tell you that both players are hitting the ball with authority. Both players are hitting the ball consistently. Both players are tearing the cover off the ball in spring training. I don't know if that's going to transfer over to the regular season. But at the very least, it is evidence and something that I'm going to put in the bin of why I want to be positive about the Chicago Cubs in the present right now. Other part about it, when we're talking about the second half of that lineup, is Dansby Swanson looks healthy. A lot of people didn't realize that he had to have core surgery over the offseason. A lot of people knew that he was injured in the month of May. I believe he hit 155 in the month of May. And I know we want to, I grew up in the time in the generation of Cal Ripken, and I think we want to applaud players that want to be out there every single day, and we're tough and we're gritty, and no matter what happens, we lace it up and we put the hard hat on and we go to work, right, Chicago? Well, in the case of Dansby Swanson, I kind of wish that he didn't. If the dude was injured, I kind of wish that they had backed off, put him on the injured list, and tried to get him healthy so he can come back, because he wasn't able to contribute to the team, and if anything, he was a detriment out there because he was playing injured. So you start piecing this together. Dansby's healthy. Miguel Amaya, PCA, look ready and more prepared to start the season and produce results right off the jump. We don't know how it's going to work over a 162. And then, of course, our top prospect, Matt Shaw, who dealt with a little bit of an oblique injury to start spring training. He's back out there. And in limited time, he's looked fantastic at the plate. Of course, there's going to be ups and downs. But what I'm getting at is that I feel like to start the season, the Chicago Cubs offensive lineup is going to have more balance than it had last year. And hopefully will be more reminiscent of the team in 2023 that Jed Hoyer loves to walk and strut and talk about how they finished, and I believe it was sixth in the National League in runs and top six, top eight in a lot of different categories. If they get that lineup in 2023, if they get that lineup this year, I think the Chicago Cubs are going to win some games. Another part that has me wanting to live in the present, live in the now, and just start enjoying this Cubs team for what it is when they start playing baseball in a couple days, is that, look, we don't know, again, what's going to happen with the bullpen, but as of right now, I can report it's been checking some boxes and things look pretty solid, and things look to be in better shape than they were last year. And it's small things. You know, Ryan Pressly's been fine as the closer. I think he's definitely an upgrade over Hector Neris, and he's got way more experience closing games than Hector Neris ever had. The other one is they brought in the reliever from the Dodgers, 37-year-old Ryan Brazier. And you're asking yourself, oh, man, 37 years old, what does this mean? Do the Dodgers really have an overabundance of talent that they just can't fit a good pitcher in there and they get rid of him for some other reason? To this point, he's looked solid. You don't know what's going to happen when the games really start happening. But to this point, you can walk into the season feeling like, to this point in spring training, he's pitched pretty well. And then the other one is kind of the lost, forgotten guy that they banked on last year, just like they did Alzolay, and they lost both of them early on in the season, is Julian Merriweather looks healthy, and he's pumping the baseball right now. I mean, that guy is going to be your sixth, seventh inning pitcher to bridge you to hopefully guys like Ryan Brazier, to maybe a guy like Nate Pearson, to a guy like Porter Hodge, that will then get you to Ryan Pressly. I just think they have more options. They definitely have more velocity in the bullpen this year, which is really nice to see. And I'm not willing to say that the bullpen is going to be a strength of the team, but I'm pretty confident the bullpen is going to be vastly improved from what it had last year. And I'm not even going to play the game of, if you cut the 28 blown saves in half to 14, well, that makes the Chicago Cubs a 97-win ball game. But even if you give us back six or seven of those games, now they're hitting that Pecota projection, which the Pecota projection has them winning 90.5 games right now. We'll see where I land on this in just a little bit. One of my concerns is I just don't think the rotation scares you. And I'm wondering if it could possibly be a bit of an issue. And when I say a bit of an issue is I'm just worried that personally, I think Justin Steele and Shota Imanaga are going to be strong, solid pitchers. And I think one or both of them have a great shot at making an all-star team this year. But the other half of that rotation scares me. And I'm starting to worry a little bit that maybe the margin for error on the days when Shota and Steele pitch is going to be a little too razor thin, as in you better win the day Shota and Steele pitch, because otherwise it's a crapshoot on the other 3 days. And that's the part that maybe has me leaning back a little bit on going crazy about what I think the Chicago Cubs are capable of this year. I'll be honest with you. I've watched him before. I watched him last year, and I've seen him this spring. Not a big fan of Matthew Boyd. Matthew Boyd in Detroit was always definitely a hit-or-miss type player. He would have some good innings, and then he would give up a crooked number left and right. I will admit that when he came back and pitched for the Guardians specifically, I watched those playoff games. He was fantastic, and he pitched well, and it somehow got him buku bucks to pitch for the Chicago Cubs. But I'm just telling you, with this guy right now, Matthew Boyd is going to be one of those great lines in the sand among Cubs fans, especially on social media. Whether you're for Matthew Boyd or whether you're against Matthew Boyd, there is going to be plenty of ammo in both sides. I could easily see this guy going out and twirling six innings of two runs, one start, jump on social media. Matthew Boyd is that dude. I told you Matthew Boyd was a great signing. What if the... You know, et cetera, et cetera. I can also see that very next start, him not getting out of the third inning, him giving up five runs, him getting beaten around a little bit, him giving up home runs, and I could see the other side going, see, I told you, he's bad, he's not good. I think Matthew Boyd is going to be up and down. I worry and have skepticism about the consistency of Matthew Boyd on this team, and to be honest with you, with this rotation to start the year, they are counting on this dude. And it worries me a little bit. Jameson Taillon, look, he's been the perfect Cub, right? When you sign a Cub pitcher to a four-year deal, I always say this, that what, out of the 4 years, maybe two and a half are positive, but he's definitely going to give you at least one and a half terrible years, because that's just the Cubby way, as long as I can remember and as long as I've been a Cubs fan growing up. So Jameson Taillon's given you a bad year. And now last year, I categorize that as a good year. So in the third one, what exactly are we going to get from Jameson Taillon? I mean, is he a guy that's going to be able to eat innings? Is he a guy that's going to be able to wiggle out of some jams? I can see him being a solid pitcher, but more like a 500-type pitcher. I think the Chicago Cubs will have to probably score some runs on the days that he pitches. So, Shota and Steele, like a whole lot. Taillon, not so sure. Matthew Boyd, scares me. The only way that can really kind of turn this around is what do they do and who can ascend and show up in that fifth spot? As of this taping on Saturday, You're listening. Oh, and by the way, you're listening to Sports Talk Chicago with Joey Christopoulos right here on WLS AM 890. Happy Saturday, Chicago. As of this taping a couple days ago, Jordan Wicks is coming off of 4 shutout innings. Javier Assad, look, guys, getting hurt in spring training, it's going to be a while with him. I don't know when and if we see him, and if we do, are they going to trust him enough to put him back in the rotation? I think he might be a guy that you'll see in the 6th, 7th inning, and that just might be the fate of Javier Assad this year after putting up some good stretches as a starter last year. So Jordan Wicks is definitely an option. The other two, obviously, and these are the aces in the hole, right? These are the magic cards. These are the information cards and the playing deck of cards. It's Ben Brown and Cade Horton. Now, Cade Horton, obviously, they already sent him down to the minors and already got his feet wet, was able to twirl an inning, pick up a save for the Cubs in the spring. I'm looking at Ben Brown on this one. And Ben Brown, who was pitching really, really well until a freak, small little fracture in his neck last year sidelined him, and then out of an abundance of caution, they didn't bring him back. I'm looking at Ben Brown on this, and if Ben Brown can be a guy for them, not an all-star, not a dude that wins 15 games, but if you're talking to me June 1st, and we will revisit this, if you said who were, you know, rank the top five rotation guys for the Chicago Cubs and showed us Steeler one or two, flip them, whatever. And if you start making a compelling case that Ben Brown is that three, and you could slide Tyone and Matthew Boyd back a little bit, I think that's one that can really change the narrative for the Chicago Cubs and how I feel about that rotation right now. The rotation kind of scares me a little bit, but Ben Brown, high velocity, really good curveball, young, he's gone deep into games last year already. I think he had 7 shutout innings and a 10 strikeout game last year. Not saying he's going to give that to you all the time. Just a little bit of what he's capable of. That's intriguing. And then finally, let's get to the big boppers in the lineup. We talked about the back half of the Chicago Cubs lineup. What about that front half? And how dynamic can it possibly be? And when we're talking about it, we're talking about Michael Bush, Ian Happ, Seiya Suzuki, and also the new guy in town, the big-time slugger, Kyle Tucker. Let's start with Michael Bush. Been pretty hard on Michael Bush in the past. I personally just don't think he profiles as a first baseman, or maybe the profile of the first baseman in today's game isn't the version that I grew up watching, and that's fine. They did a stat recently on ESPN that I believe it was all first basemen across Major League Baseball. I think the batting average was .243 and the OPS was somewhere in .740, .750, something along those lines. And Michael Bush was just above that. So he's an average MLB first baseman. He's looked fantastic in the spring. And hopefully that can carry over. Maybe he can have a strong second season, and maybe he can be the kind of guy that surprises me. He was their cleanup hitter last year. Or he's going to be their cleanup hitter this year. So get ready for it. Ian Happ, tenured Cub, Mr. Consistent. Don't expect too much from him other than probably 20 to 25 home runs, 80 RBIs, and an average around .250. And hey, if you get that kind of consistency, you can't wag your finger at it. Did you know that Ian Happ is actually only 10 home runs shy of passing Chris Bryant in the all-time home run list in Chicago Cubs history? Where does the time go? He's 24 home runs away from passing Andre Dawson on that list. And he's 29 home runs away from passing Derek Lee. Say what you want, but Ian Happ shows up every single year and gives you exactly the same thing every year. And sometimes that consistency needs to be applauded more than, well, why can't he hit some sort of ceiling that maybe, you know, isn't reachable? I'm not going to go too deep into Seiya. Seiya just needs to stay healthy. We all know how talented he is. Man, if he plays 140, 150 games, you know, let's see where those numbers are at the end of the year. And then finally, Kyle Tucker. Incredibly excited to watch this guy play. He's had an awful spring, but honestly, I don't care about spring stats. All I care about is whether he's healthy and ready to go to start the season. Sometimes if you play well in the spring, hopefully you can carry it over and at least assuage some doubts that maybe you have about a certain player. I didn't have any doubts with Kyle Tucker coming in. But, man, this is a guy that, in my personal opinion, I'm hoping he hits 35 home runs, 110 RBIs. And trust me, I'm not going to do it right now. There will be plenty of talk on my opinions and thoughts on whether Kyle Tucker's should be a Cub, how much, will Tom do it? Trust me, there's plenty of time for that drama. But I am predicting a huge season for Kyle Tucker, possible Silver Slugger, definitely an All-Star. He's got a Gold Glove caliber. The Chicago Cubs have an outside shot at having every outfielder get a Gold Glove this year. And I'm not even counting Dansby Swanson, who usually wins Gold Gloves, and Nico Hoerner, who's usually a finalist for Gold Gloves. That defense started off bad last year. If that comes out and that stays airtight, I think the Chicago Cubs got a really good shot to have a strong year. So let's do it. Win total prediction before I get out of here. Pecota has them at 90.5. Last year they won 83. Man, my dumb little Cubs brain wants to say 92, but I'm going to go with 88. I'm going to go with 88 wins. And the only reason why I'm going to go with 88 is because I don't fully trust the rotation. I do think sometime in July they're going to need to make a huge move, and I think it's going to have to be a starting pitcher. If they do make that move, I could see them easily sailing over 90. But for now, I'm going to hedge my bets a little bit. I'm going to call it at 98. Whether that's bad, good enough to win the division, I honestly don't know. I think it's going to be pretty razor thin. Brewers never go anywhere. A lot of people like the Reds, but a lot of people like the Reds every single year. But 88 wins is going to get you really close. In the National League, you got to win your division in the NL Central because you're not going to make the wild card. There's too many other great competitive teams across the swath in the NL East and the NL West. So in the Central, you got to win your division. I'm going with 88 for the Chicago Cubs. It's going to get them close to the division. I think they're going to have to make a move in July. And if they do, and if they make the right one, that's going to push them over. And I think it's going to be an incredibly competitive and entertaining season in Wrigleyville. And I'm just hoping, for Chicago Cubs fans' sake, I'm going to be living in the present. And I hope that you do too. Don't worry about the past. Certainly don't worry about the future, because it will just give you anxiety and make you upset. Try and live in the present. Enjoy this baseball team. Because honestly, I think it's going to be a competitive, entertaining product. And honestly, Chicago sports, we sure could use that right now.
Injured in an accident? That's no game. But you can bet those insurance companies are going to play dirty to keep that cash from you. What you need is a most valuable player on your team. MVP Injury Law has been bringing home the gold for their clients for over 30 years. No win, no fee. MVPinjurylaw.com. We'll get you the gold.
312-883-9500 MVP.
MVPinjurylaw.com. We'll get you the gold.